Hello, this is John Ivy from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the February 2011 issue of Boys Life magazine. Our first article today is entitled Getting Started in Skateboarding, pages 18 through 23. And has a picture here of a couple of gentlemen doing their thing, practicing their skills in skateboarding. Let's find out what's involved. It has a caption here. Take some tips from a world record holder skater by Janine Adil. Keith Status. He was born June 5, 1995. His hometown, Merritt Island, Florida. Guinness World Record most consecutive front side ollies on a half pipe. Favorite local skate spot, Cocoa Beach State Park. His current trick, front side nose blunt revert. Skaters he looks up to, Danny Way and Kevin Kowalski. His advice? Have fun. Take turns and be respectful to other skateboarders. Do not take even the easiest tricks for granted. Those are the ones that will get you hurt. Keith Baldassi, 15, wants to make you a better skateboarder, and he has the skills to do it. In September 2008, Keith broke the Guinness World Book of Records for 46 consecutive skateboard frontside ollies on a halfpipe. A little lingo or video at boyslife.org if you don't know what this is. His mom helped him stage the event in the backyard, with money being raised for a local cancer charity. Keith's amazing final tally, 348 ollies. And when he's not actually on his skateboard, I'm talking about skateboarding, thinking about skateboarding, watching skateboarding, he says. Now that's dedication. Keith entered his first real competition at 10, and the next year he won the 14 and under division of the Florida Bull Riders Cup. Since then he has traveled coast to coast to compete. With a few ramps in his backyard, he has a great spot to practice right at home, which he does almost every day. Except that Keith doesn't call it practicing. It's just having a good time with my friends, being creative, doing whatever we want skating. Here are some skateboarding tips from Keith. Tip 1. Learn how to fall. It's a fact, Keith says. Be prepared for falls when you're starting. That's why it's important to learn the right way to take a tumble. If the fall is too big for you to just land on your feet, use your feet for a second as a stepping point. Tuck up into a ball, something like a skier's tuck position, and then tumble and roll onto your shoulder. And Keith adds, always wear safety gear. Tip 2. Learn how to drop in on a ramp. Start with the tail of your board on the edge of a ramp. Next, push down with the front foot and stay centered over the skateboard. And has, of course, pictures here of Keith demonstrating these various tips on how to fall and roll. Tip 3. Learn how to ollie. You'll be airborne for this trick, which can be done on either a flat surface or a ramp. Kick down on the tail of the skateboard and then level out the board by sliding your front foot forward. Think of it as a sort of jumping motion with the board glued to your feet. This will take lots of practice, but once you master the ollie, you'll have the foundation for many other tricks. Keith, a little lingo. Backside. Turns done when the skater's back faces the outside of the turn arc. Fakie. Skating backward from a skater's usual stance. Frontside. Turns done when the skater's front faces the outside of the turn arc. Goofy. skating with the left foot in the back. Grind, using the trucks to slide along an edge. Half pipe, a U-shaped ramp. Ollie, a jumping trick. Regular, skating with the right foot in back. And there's, of course, another couple of pictures of Keith, the three of them. One when he's just looking off into the sunset with his skateboard. Another one when he's looks like he's practicing that ollie. And then another picture when he's just looking about in space. His advice? Have fun. Take turns and be respectful to other skateboarders. Now there's a big picture of the skateboard. And the title here is Anatomy of a Skateboard. Well, there's the nose, the front part of the deck from the front two screws to the board's front tip. Then there's the deck towards the middle of the skateboard, the long flat board a skater stands on. Tail, the back part of the deck from the last two screws to the board's back tip. Grip tape, a sandpaper-like tape skaters apply to the deck's top so their shoes can grip the board. Trucks. Now the skateboard is turned on its turned upside down. Trucks. Two T-shaped metal parts mounted on the deck's underside to which wheels are attached. And then we have and that's the skateboard. Our next article, entitled Ideal Igloos. And here he has a picture of in a snowy, snowy area. And it says, Boy Scouts travel to paradise to find the perfect snow and the perfect temperature for building igloos. Marshall Barnhart Left and Garrett Benson show off the tools they use to create the perfect igloo, a shovel and an ice saw. The scouts of Troop 474 in Kent, Washington, will tell you that the most important material for building an igloo is deep, dense snow. This compressed snow, when cut properly with an ice saw, will create the building blocks for the igloo walls. And those walls will form the foundation upon which your cozy home for the night will stand. So where to go for the perfect snow? To the one place the National Park Service called the snowiest place on Earth, where snowfall is measured regularly, the southern slopes of Mount Rainier National Park, in an area known as Paradise. Last winter, Troop 474 made the two-hour drive to Mount Rainier, put on their snowshoes, and walked to an area that looked good for spending two nights in an igloo. Cold enough. Ideally, you want the temperature to be less than 25 degrees. Oh, yeah, it was cold enough, says 12-year-old Marshall Barnhart, who would be sleeping in an igloo for the first time. If constructed well, the igloo should keep you insulated from the cold and wind outdoors. Hot air from your breath will keep the temperature inside the igloo well above freezing. Igloos were first built by the Inuit people across the Arctic region. They used these snow domes as shelter on hunting trips. Troop 474 was creating igloos as an appropriate form of winter camping. During the course of the weekend, they would also learn how to prepare for an avalanche and where to take cover quickly in case of a heavy snowfall. Under a tree is wise because the branches will act as cover. Right start. But first, the scouts went to work creating their two-man igloos. After finding a big enough area, the guys stomped down with their snowshoes to compress the soft snow on top. Then they sketched circular rings in the snow, some 6 feet in diameter, where they could start building. Next came the hard part, cutting snow blocks using an ice saw that was specially made by a former scoutmaster. The saw had curved teeth to cut through the solid snow, and all the scouts took turns carving blocks in their igloos. And a few captions, some pictures here. Above, here's Ryan Colbrick. He's on the left. He sets a block of snow in the spinal pattern required of any good igloo as Daniel Rothschild's helps. Below left, Brandon Kaufman hands a freshly cut block of snow to J.J. Ruffin to take to the igloo site. Igloo building tips. Don't sweat it. Literally, perspiration can make a winter camper miserable quickly. Remember to ventilate. Work slowly to avoid overheating. Don't attempt to build any snow shelter if the temperature is above freezing. Snow can quickly get cold and wet if temps are higher than 32 degrees. After packing in the snow, let it sit for a couple of hours before starting your shelter. Sleep with your digging tools inside the igloo. You'll need them if your exit collapses. Never venture into a winter wilderness without an expert in tow who understands the threat of avalanches and extreme temperatures. It was tiring, says Kenny Howard, age 13. The blocks were heavy. They're also important. Without this foundation, an igloo doesn't stand a chance. Of making it through this night without collapsing. Having cut their blocks, the scouts made a base layer around the ring, connecting block to block in a circle. They would pack snow against the outside of each block to fill in any gaps. Once the first row of the igloo was in place, they used the saw to cut a diagonal slant on the top of the blocks. Starting at a point anywhere on the circle, they shaved off enough snow that the top of the block spiraled slightly downward. This way they could start adding more blocks upward in a spiral formation. Each of the blocks should lean inward, and the scouts had to continue packing snow to fill in additional holes in the big jigsaw puzzle. The last block is called the keystone and is placed directly on top of the igloo to cover the final opening. When it was placed, the scouts packed snow against the inside of the blocks to make the inside wall smooth. Room to breathe. After completing the igloos, the scouts of Troop 474 still had more work. They had to create a tunnel under the shelter to drag in their sleeping bags. They also had to create ventilation holes near the top so they could breathe in fresh air during the night. We had too many ventilation holes, so it was a little bit cold, says 15-year-old Daniel Rothschilds. Also, our igloo was on a slant, so we kept sliding downhill in the middle of the night. Dealing with these slight imperfections, the scouts still enjoyed their rune for the weekend. Surrounded by snow, it was a great experience, says Albert Fuji, 12. It was also fun to be able to build the igloos with friends. And so it has pictures here of the boys preparing to build the igloos. At right, there's Garrett Benson. He fulfills his cooking duties by making a hot breakfast. And then there's a young man left. After he carves the last few blocks to fit in their place, Daniel Rothschilds will be ready to seal his igloo. Some work, some play. It wasn't all work and no play for Troop 474 during the day. The guys would hike up a edge of Mount Rainier or go sledding down a hill. Others just played in the snow. We chilled out, literally, says 12-year-old Garrett Benson. For food, the scouts would boil snow, then use the warm water to make soup or noodles. All the cooking was done outside the igloos so the gleaming white walls wouldn't blacken or worse, melt. Next article, pages 30, 31, after the spill. Louisiana scouts step up to help wildlife after an ecological disaster. Last April, an explosion on a British petroleum drilling rig off the Louisiana coast in the Gulf of Mexico started the biggest offshore oil spill in the United States history. Almost 200 million gallons of oil gushed into the Gulf for nearly 3 months before the leak was capped. Oil spills caused extensive harm to wildlife and ecosystems, and scouts in Louisiana weren't just going to stand by while it happened. Here's what some of them are doing. Help us help them. When Tenderfoot Scout Rory McCracken, 12 of Troop 1, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, heard about the oil spill, his first concern was for the men who were injured or died in the accident and their families. Then he thought about the wildlife that would be affected by this gushing oil. I've always loved animals and the ocean, Rory says. Newspapers printed photographs of seabirds covered in black and thick black goo. Gory wanted to do something. Rory wanted to do something. Rory made a list of 72 animals that live in the Gulf and were endangered by the spill. Then he designed a blue t-shirt using the names of these animals to form a peace sign. The shirt says, "Help us, help them." He launched a website. Kids love the eco.org, in which he sells his shirts and wristbands. Rory donates the profits to the Audubon Nature Institute's Louisiana Marine Mammal and Sea Turtle Rescue Program. The Audubon Nature Institute is Louisiana's official first responder for injured marine wildlife. During the first 4 months after the oil spill began, LMNSTRP cleaned 187 sea turtles. In August, Rory and his family drove to New Orleans to make their first donation to the Audubon Nature Institute, $5,000. "We're going to take this as far as we can go," he says. "Our goal is to keep raising money and teaching kids about the animals in the Gulf and how we can all live together." So far, Rory has raised about $5,000 more. His scout troop helps with a t-shirt request, packing and shipping the orders. They have shipped shirts as far away as Anchorage, Alaska. A soldier in Iraq made a donation but told Rory to keep the t-shirt. Local businesses have helped by hosting fundraisers and selling the t-shirts. Rory plans to become a marine biologist and has already earned his diving certification. Through his website and talks to school groups and scout troops, Rory teaches about the Gulf and its ecosystems and wildlife. Hunting for info. On the beach of a remote island off Louisiana in the Gulf of Mexico, members of Troop 405 of Lafayette, Louisiana, look for signs of the impact of the oil spill on wildlife and the ecosystem. As the sun beats down, the scouts come across the decayed carcass of a leatherback sea turtle. They take a GPS reading of its location, snap a photo, and mark it with a blue hard hat on a wooden post. The information the scouts collect at the Marsh Island Wildfire Refuge will be submitted to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which is tracking the effects of the oil spill on wildlife in the Gulf. Members of the Wildlife Service will collect the turtle and determine if it died as a result of the spill. "The sea turtles were probably most affected," says Eagle Scout Jake Parra, 14. "Sea turtles are very sensitive to oil. When it gets on their skin, it irritates it." The scouts and other volunteers comb the beach looking for dead or injured wildlife, tar balls, oil in the water, and filth and litter. They traveled about an hour on a fishing boat to the uninhabited island that is a haven for wildlife but rarely has human visitors. "We jumped off the boat and walked in waist-deep water, and then we spread out, walked about 8 miles along the shoreline," says Life Scout Timothy Andrews, 15. They also searched for ridge openings called washouts that would allow water and oil to enter a nearby marsh. "The impermanent openings are created by hurricanes and often are too small, sometimes just a few feet wide, to be mapped." "We found 3 openings," Timothy says, adding that they did not see the oil had seeped into the marsh. The scouts also logged the air and water temperature, wind direction, and tide levels. Groups of scouts plan to return every 2 weeks to log conditions, see whether they have changed, and report any useful info to the appropriate authorities in charge of the cleanup. The scouts were happy they found no oil and only 3 tar balls that looked as if they predated the big spill. And it has a picture here. Roy McCracken holds the t-shirt he designed to raise funds for a wildlife rescue program that helps oil spill victims. The shirt is entitled, "Help Us, Help Them." And then to the right, Audubon Nature Institute professionals wash oil from a baby Kemp's Ridley sea turtle. "Well, it was all worthwhile to see that the beach was pretty clean of oil," Timothy says. Our next article, Scouts in Action, pages 38 and 40. Ah, true story of Scouts in Action. John McPherson, 15, and his brother Chris, 18, were riding a personal watercraft during a family vacation in Cozumel, Mexico, when they hit a large wave. Chris slammed into the vessel as both boys fell into the water. Chris was unconscious and face down in the water. John swam to his brother and turned him over. John put his arms around Chris and pumped his chest to expel the water from his mouth. Then pulled his brother to the watercraft and lifted him on into it. John drove the watercraft ashore and helped Chris to the beach. Several bystanders rushed to. Paramedics took Chris to a hospital for treatment of a broken jaw and other serious injuries. Chris recovered at home over the next several weeks. Life Scout John McPherson, a member of Troop 356, chartered to Dublin Baptist Church, Dublin, Ohio, received a heroism award for his actions. And of course, there are pictures here of his brother falling into the river and John reaching out after him, practicing the Heimlich maneuver, and then his brother going into the, picking him up, getting him to shore, and then a nice picture with John receiving his heroism award. Good job, John. Another Scouts in Action. They saved their friend from a runaway rocket. Chris Rogers, 15, and Josh Range, 14, were participating in a scout rocketry activity at Bromide, Oklahoma, when a rocket misfired and hit their friend, knocking him to the ground. The rocket hit the boy's arm, then entered his chest, breaking several ribs and tearing his lungs. Josh kept the victim calm and used Chris' shirt to control the bleeding. Chris alerted their scout leaders. They called an ambulance and administered first aid to the injured scout. Chris kept everyone calm as Josh directed paramedics to the accident scene. An airborne ambulance took the scout to a hospital. Life Scout Chris Rogers at the top and First Class Scout Josh Raines, members of Troop 444, chartered to Arapaho United Methodist Church, Richardson, Texas, each received a heroism award for his actions. And one more true stories of Scouts in Action. He saved his sister. That's still on page 40. Landon Domain, 16, and his sisters were swimming during a family vacation in South Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when a powerful rip current swept them into the sea and into the water. London and one of his sisters made it back to shore, but his other sister was still in danger. He tried to alert the lifeguards, but they didn't hear him, so Landon swam back out to help. Landon reached his sister as lifeguards swam out to rescue other swimmers caught in the same current. Landon helped his sister back to the beach. Life Scout Landon Domain, a member of Troop 34, chartered to Mount Olive United Methodist in Concord, North Carolina, received an honor medal for his actions. And again, we see the picture of people falling into the water and desperate to be saved. And then, getting close to the bank, a couple of them have been saved. And, of course, Life Scout Landon Domain receiving his heroism award. Good job, Landon. Our next article, Adventures of Pee-wee Harris. This time, Pee-wee looks at pioneering. That's page 42. And there are Pee-wee and his buddies, and one of them says to Pee-wee, "Wow, Pee-wee, this is amazing." "Thanks, Sam." And it seems like they're in a nice little cabin. And then his friend says, "I mean, it's a pioneering masterpiece. These walls are tight. Looks like this thing could withstand a hurricane. The ceiling is solid." And then Pee-wee says, "Thanks for noticing, Sam. It's waterproof, leak-proof, airtight, and wind-resistant." And then his friend looks at Pee-wee and says, I do have one question, though. why did you build it in your room? And Pee-wee says, are you kidding? It's a blizzard out there. All right. Scouting around, let's take a look at the Merit Badge Minute, pages 36 and 37. What do you need to know to continue your advancement in 1 minute? Photography. So it has a young man taking pictures in the wildlife. Film versus digital. Go to a camera store and ask an expert about the advantages and disadvantages of film camera and the digital cameras. Digital might be easier, but it won't always be better. Number two, learn some photography basics. Sit down with a photography book from your own local library or bookstore and look for chapters on light, flash, or no flash exposure, composition, the rule of the third angle of view, and stopping action. Number three, document an event as a photojournalist. Look in your local paper and find an upcoming event that interests you and is open to the public. Bring your camera and take lots of pictures. Start about 12 images you believe best tell the story of the event. Print them and then mount them on poster board. An observer should be able to get a good idea of what happened at the event simply by looking at your pictures. Graphic arts. Collect samples of printed products produced using the different printing process, such as screening printing, digital or effect lithography. Number two, design your own printed place. It can be an ad, flyer, T-shirt, magazine articles, anything you want. Use a computer or draw it by hand. 3. Visit a printing plant or other printing facility. Learn how newspapers and magazines get printed from the editor to the press. Art. Design a logo. It could be a logo for your own sports team, or you could make up a new logo for a product you like. Choose an interesting visual subject. It would be a person or an object. Draw it from four different ways, such as pen and ink, watercolors, pencil or paints, or computer generated. And three, with a trusted adult, visit an art gallery or museum. Learn about the art that is on display. What is the common theme? Why is it significant? All right, well, then we'll conclude with more Scouts in Action. Why don't we conclude with Think and Grin, pages 54 and 55. Here's the joke of the month. Here's a top-rated joke from boyslife.org. Don't like it? Submit your own. Josh, how does a cow learn how to walk? Chris, I got nothing. Josh, by putting one foot in front of the udder. That's from Josh L. in Smithtown, New York. Tom Swifty. She tore my Valentine in two, Tom said half-heartedly. Chris Wimbley in South Haven, Mississippi. Well, we've run out of time for today's reading. I am John Ivey, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience and readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's reading. So long, till next time.